If you're tired of one-sided conversations and mean-spirited rhetoric, it's time to listen and engage. This is The Rational Revolution, a look at today's issues through a politically purple lens. Now, here's your host, Chris Elfheim.
Well, good evening, my friends. It is Thursday, almost the new year. We're in the week of weirdness, where no one knows what day it is. Do you? I don't know what day it is. I'll tell you what day it is. It's the day I don't want to take down Christmas decorations. That's the day it is.
Okay.
I do not enjoy taking down Christmas decorations.
I enjoy watching my wife take them down.
Mm.
Mostly because, you know, I don't take them down. I'm not really good at organizing that stuff. But I will say, I really am always sad to see them taken down.
I don't like taking them down. It's just a process. It's like packing up after vacation.
Is it the process?
I don't like it.
The process of it, or the fact that they're putting them away and you don't get to see them anymore until next year?
That's the process.
Oh, see, more for me, it's more about I don't get to see them until next year again.
I do feel this is the week of no man's land.
I agree with that.
It's been this way in my career. We've never, you know, really worked a lot between the Christmas and New Year's. We've always had, you know, just kind of a couple of quiet weeks. And so the days just kind of blend together and all of a sudden it'll be over and you have to talk yourself back into a disciplined work week.
And I really should not have said something about watching my wife take them down because I guarantee, because she does listen. I guarantee that I'm probably taking them down now and putting them away.
The fact that I made no comment on it shows that I'm your friend.
And you're a lot smarter than I am in this situation.
I made no reference whatsoever.
Uh-huh.
None whatsoever.
You probably texted her while I was
Welcome
making that dumb comment.
To the Rational Revolution, where we point out all of Dean's flaws.
The list keeps getting longer and longer.
It's not a revolution. I've been doing it for years. Anyway, welcome. We are here once again. Our goal here on the Rational Revolution is just to have good conversations. Talk about issues that will affect you and your family and the kitchen table, whether they be local, they be state, they be national. And sometimes we bring on some special guests. Tonight, as my guest host, we have the fabulous Dean Rash with us here.
Rash.
We're in the old family.
You know, we had this conversation over the weekend.
Know.
My brother says Rash. You know, my kids and myself, I'll say Rash. It doesn't matter to me.
I went to school with Rashes, and so every now and then I slide back, so I apologize.
That's okay.
Anyway, I'm looking at Conrad from some verification. Do we have our friend on the line?
Yes, we do.
We do. Excellent. Welcome, former Congressman Reed Ribble, to the show. Welcome back, I should say.
Hey, Happy New Year, Chris.
Happy New Year to you. How is the family? Did everybody celebrate?
Everybody's doing good. We had a great Christmas holiday, and we'll celebrate again this weekend. Like you said, we're in Dead Man's Week here,
yes.
So nothing much going on. But my wife is, as we're speaking, taking our Christmas decorations down.
So this is the excuse for you not to be helping?
Unfortunately, I just learned that I misspoke too quickly, and I should be helping too. And now my wife hearing this will probably make me do it.
Mm-hmm.
So, just a little advice. Just
if you're
in case.
Unavailable next year and during this dead week, we understand why, and
exactly.
Your wife has every right. All right. So the conversation tonight, and as a reminder, I never share with the guests what we're going to talk about, because our goal is to have a conversation. It's not to necessarily have a presentation by an expert or by either of us, but just to talk in common sense language about how things are going. So tonight, drum roll, the conversation is going to be about healthcare. Healthcare, healthcare, healthcare. Now, that's a pretty doggone big topic, but it does affect everyone. Everyone on the planet, local, state, and federal. So a couple of issues in that category that we're going to talk about, and we're going to pick Congressman Ribble's, you know, just pick his brain a little bit because he had to deal with it firsthand. But we're going to deal with, we can deal with Medicare. Then we're going to slide into the affordable health care, how that's going, good, bad, or otherwise. And then we're going to talk about perhaps some solutions. So are you ready, Congressman?
Well, I'm ready. I don't know. You hit the nail on the head. I am not an expert at hardly anything, so this should be good.
Now, if all current and former politicians would just acknowledge that, wouldn't it be an easier place to be? We don't have all the answers, and I think that's okay. But I think that as we have the conversation about, you know, different information that we have and how it affects us. Our goal is to just try and create some conversation and some empathy for people that may not be in the same situation we're in. You and I have spent plenty of time around tables here in Green Bay talking about healthcare, Medicare, Social Security, that kind of stuff. So just share with me, you know, your overall impression of the overall state of Medicare right now.
Well, I mean, the Medicare Trust Fund is going insolvent and 2025. I mean, so we've got a crisis coming for seniors, and that will require some type of government intervention. And so they're propping it up already because the losses are starting to go up and up each year, and in part because they haven't actually raised the premium that workers are paying. You know, unlike Social Security, there's no cap on Medicare, but the rate that they charge per percent of payroll paid is too low for the cost of the health care that seniors are using when they get 65 and older. And so there's going to have to be some changes to the program. What those look like and some changes to revenue. How they go about that has been undecided because nobody wants to touch it. And I don't really understand why they don't want to touch it, because it affects so many Americans' lives.
And I'm going to hold my follow-up, but I'm going to ask you a question. When you were in Congress, you were down in D.C. working with your from both sides of the aisle. Mm-hmm. Who agreed with you that Medicare needed to be adjusted? Were they just on Team Red? Were they, you know, where were they?
Everybody.
That's what I want everybody to hear. That's what I want everybody to hear. Yes.
Yeah. Everybody knows it. I mean, it's just at this point, Chris, it is really arithmetic. There's X number of dollars coming in. There's X number of dollars going out. And the dollars going out greatly exceed the dollars coming in.
Yeah.
And so you either have to change the benefit structure. It could be... for example, you could, instead of having to start at age 65, start at age 67 or whatever. You have to do something with the benefit structure, and then you've got to do something with the revenue side.
I think the hardest problems to solve in our country are the ones that involve change for a large group of people. And, you know, and we know how politics work in terms of ads and money and negative ads. And I feel that as soon as anyone brings up the topic, the competitor side, whether it be dark money or front money, is debatable, but they will jump at he's going to or she's going to take away something. And to
Correct.
Me, that's it's unfortunate because it's keeping us, it's preventing us from actually having a conversation about something that is broken that we have to figure out for the benefit of all those people. Now, from a revenue standpoint, the bulk of the revenue for Medicare comes from the Medicare tax, right? The FICA?
Correct.
And the FICA, if I remember correctly, the FICA is only, are we only taxed FICA up to a certain amount?
No, you're 100% of wages.
So it is 100%. So it would actually, it must be Social Security then that's capped.
That's right.
On
Social Security has an income cap.
Yeah. So that does cause to fix it, you know, we're going to have to make some pretty major changes. Now, do you think, and again, I'm asking this from your perspective inside, is it a matter of we can just make changes for, you know, I'm 52. Right. I will challenge that there are not many 50-year-old people on the planet that think they're going to have the same benefits as their parents for Medicare and Social Security. Is that a fair statement?
I would say it's fair. I'm 56. I'm the same with you.
How old?
56.
Real old. That's the main answer.
I'm talking to two children.
I don't know about that.
My wife says I act like I'm 12, so I guess maybe.
I like her. I like her better and better every day. By the way, there is a note on the board here that said Chris's wife is not taking decorations down right now either. All right, so no one's taking
She's
down decorations
for you.
Except for your wife. Anyway, so in terms of revenue and benefit, and again, our conversation here is to help people realize that it's necessary to have the conversation. So some people will say the answer to fix it is to just take the money from someplace else. Those who want to maintain it the way that it is. Why is or is not that a valid option?
I think it is a valid option, but nobody wants to identify what that is. Mm-hmm. And when you look at the amount of money we're spending on discretionary spending, where members of Congress have a choice of whether they're going to spend money or not, the deficits are so large. I mean, this year we're talking a deficit that's going to be pushing $2 trillion. The deficits are so large that there is no money to take from something else, because whatever they take should go to deficit reduction first. And so this is a real challenge. But the Medicare tax that workers pay is 1.45%. Once they get over $200,000, it goes up by another 0.9%. But that hasn't been raised for decades. Yeah. And at some point, you're going to have to recognize that healthcare costs are going through the roof, and that, in fact, the prepayment that every worker pays when they're 56 to so that they've got the Medicare benefit when they're 65, that prepayment needs to go up more commensurate to what the costs of healthcare are doing. And so, but I mean, I also feel, and this is where, as a conservative, I might get in trouble with some of your more left-leaning listeners, is it just seems to me that there are two places where we've got exploding costs, where prices are going up very fast. It's in healthcare and it's in education. And in those two places are the two places where the federal government is maybe too involved in it. And the more money they throw at the problem, the more the industrial complex in healthcare and the industrial complex in education want to grab a hold of it.
Yeah, I think we got about a minute before we hit in the break, but I do believe that the healthcare industry itself, and you know, both Gene and I have worked within the insurance field of healthcare for at least at some point in time for many years. And I think it's very fair to say that the healthcare industry truly has become a business. The insurance business, the healthcare business. And we can talk when we come back from the break. We've got Medicare Advantage now, and I believe that was very much a GOP concept, and it was meant to theoretically privatize and get some of the debt and the business off of Medicare. So I really want to explore that and find out whether, from your perspective, you see that as helping or hurting from a taxpayer standpoint. And then we're going to talk about helping or hurting from a client a person that's actually receiving it. Hang on with us. Again, this is Chris Elf. I'm Rational Revolution. I am here with guest host Dean now you got me screwed up. Dean Rash and former Congressman Reed Rebel joining us on the phone. So come on back after the break, everybody.
You know that you can count me out. Don't you know it's gonna be alright. Alright.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Rational Revolution. I'm Chris Elf. I'm with my guest host, Dean Rash, and on the phone with us, all the way down from, is it Tennessee?
Tennessee,
all the way down from Tennessee. Former Congressman Reed Rebel is here joining us, and we are on the riveting topic. I know, but it's healthcare, and we all are frustrated. We all are concerned, and it's coming into political season. We're going to hear about it more and more. So I think it's important to have a conversation and talk realistically about what's going on. So we ended the last session talking about Medicare and the fact that Medicare Advantages were brought in. And I was still in Wausau at the time. So I'm going to say they kind of started really coming around. Would that have been 2000 and early 2000s, right?
Yeah, somewhere around there.
Yes, they started kicking out. So, Congressman, from your perspective, tell me Medicare Advantage. Do you believe this is helping or hurting? And again, that's two answers, the taxpayer and the person with coverage.
I don't necessarily think it's hurting the person that has the coverage because they're choosing the coverage that they want. But it is absolutely more expensive than alternatives, just whether it's in you're in regular straight Medicare or whether you have a supplement plan. Those are better for the taxpayer from a cost standpoint than Medicare Advantage.
Let's say that again. Which one is more expensive?
The Medicare Advantage plan is more expensive for the government than the supplement plans are.
Really? Both Dean and I are looking at each other like, really?
So Congressman, yep. what I'm understanding then from what you're saying is that I'm guessing the reimbursement rates to the insurance carriers through Medicare Advantage is greater than if they're just doing a straight payout under regular Medicare with a supplement. Does that sound accurate?
That is accurate.
Wow.
I was not aware of that.
I will share from the client's perspective. So I mean, I deal in the retiree world, and I don't really do anything with Medicare anymore, but I have plenty of clients that are around it. And to me, what I liked about traditional Medicare and a supplement, and I really liked the supplements with a copay. So it was a little bit of skin in the game for the client. But what I liked about that is an insurance company was not in charge. There were the DRGs, the diagnostic related groups. And basically, if the doctor said it was medically necessary, Medicare then said, okay, so be it. And it was taken care of. On the Medicare Advantage world, it's very different. Medicare is no longer saying, yep, that's medically necessary. They are now putting in the steps, which are theoretically meant to be cost savings, but provide good care. But the outcome of that feels very different from a client. Now, I will tell you, there are an awful lot of people that have Medicare Advantages that are very happy. Those tend to be people that aren't doctoring a lot.
Mm-hmm. they're healthy people who have income. Or they have some resources that they can help pay for those copays and out-of-pocket expenses.
My dad, as an example, has needed, it's, you know, German heritage, bow-legged. Every person in my dad's family has had to have knee replacements. And he probably should have had his no less than 3 to 5 years ago. But circumstances in the family, he put it off and put it off. Finally got to the position that he was ready to have them done, went into the doctor. He is on a Medicare Advantage plan. Went into the doctor, and the doctor, because of the insurance company relationship, said, nope, you can't have them. Even though you have zero cartilage, even though physical therapy is not going to do you any good, you still are going to have to go through this six-month process to see that we've tried everything else first, and then you can have them.
Sure, they want. But look at, see, the problem is that through the Medicare Advantage plans, and I'm going to have friends in the health insurance industry that are going to just probably go wild when they hear me talk.
I know,
this way.
Me too.
You've only got about five or six companies that dominate that industry.
Yes,
and so it is almost fully monopolized.
Yep.
Now, sure, you can buy Humana, you can buy United Health, you can buy Blue Cross Blue Shield, whatever. But now you're stuck in a network that they have negotiated the pricing.
Right.
And it's all part, in my way of viewing this, is part of the medical health care industrial complex, where I would much rather have 330 million Americans shopping for themselves than five insurance companies shopping for 300 million people.
Yeah.
And which leads me right into the discussion of price transparency. You cannot tell me with all the data and electronic records today that these big medical systems, including the health insurance industry, do not know, let's say, what a gallbladder cost replace or a knee replacement or shoulder replacement, or for a lot of seniors, hip replacements. They have that down to the nickel.
Well,
they know exactly.
Medicare already has that. I mean, that's what the DRGs were for. The diagnostic-related groups were saying if you had a stroke and you went to the hospital, the hospital is going to get paid for 14 days. If they kept you for 21 days, they're going to get paid for 14. If they got you out and sent you off for rehab at a nursing home in 7, they still got paid 14. But the bottom line is they knew what the charge was going in. Now, again, we've taken rational thought, in my opinion, out of healthcare. The one thing that we're supposed to count on was that Medicare was supposed to be looking out for the patient. And I think, and again, we all have friends in the health world, and I truly, truly believe that our doctors and nurses are doing everything in their can to provide great care.
Yeah, they're the middle. They're stuck in
of this. Yeah. And I got to tell you, they're not that wild about being in the industry anymore either, because it's paperwork and it's crazy. I've got a couple comments here, Reed, I'm going to read off. The first one is, I think major corporations are somewhat culpable because in the late 90s, early 2000s, they cut healthcare coverage drastically as part of retiree benefits. That's a lot for the government to pick up. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, my thoughts are that there's a savings on one end, expense on the other. However, the taxes that the government has taken for senior care, for senior health care, those same workers for those big corporations have been paying in all these years automatically. And so are we saying that they have to pay a tax but don't get a benefit simply because they work for General Motors rather than for the landscaper down the street?
Yeah, I get that. There's never any perfect answer. I guess my issue is, and I don't care where you are in Wisconsin or any of the country, every time you turn around, they're putting up a new medical facility or insurance building. We're up here in Northeast Wisconsin.
Yeah. Right.
Brand spanking new. All through the chaos, of COVID, we're showing 20, double digit revenue increases on these insurance companies that they're supposedly hurting so bad. Well,
totally monopolized.
It totally is. So there's a record. Then and you can tie that right into the shortage of medical staff. The nurses and the doctors. I think we have actually a lot more nurses and doctors than we think, but they're all spread out because Aurora wants to fight with Bellin and all the insurance networks only go to their own. Mm-hmm. So we have more and more facilities with empty floors of people because they don't have the staff to run them. That there's a problem with that. That we are really in a chase your tail situation in healthcare. So how do we fix it?
Yeah.
We've got about 30 seconds left before we head into the next break. But
in 30 seconds, how do you fix it? The reality is this thing is so badly broken, it will ultimately end up being an entire single-payer system. That's the direction it's headed.
An entire single-payer system, mm-hmm. which
is good for it, whether you agree with that or disagree with it philosophically. That's where this is headed.
That's where it's going.
And that's
absolutely
not a good situation.
All right, we're heading into a break. We are going to come back again. Congressman Ribble and we have Dean Rash here talking healthcare, insurance, and all that gory fun stuff that we need to know about going into election season because it's going to be on our topics. Come on back after the break.
If you'd like to join the Rational Revolution and engage, download the Civic Media app wherever you get your apps. Choose your station, WGBW or WISS, and click on the text button in the lower right-hand corner. Looking at today's issues through a politically purple lens, this is the Rational Revolution. And once again, here's Chris Elfheim.
It's me. It's Thursday. It's rainy and drizzly out here. But hey, we're talking healthcare. Here with the fabulous Dean Rash up here in De Pere and former Congressman Reed Ribble, my friend down from in Tennessee, but absolutely from the Fox Valley at heart. You know you're still a member up here. All right.
I am.
So healthcare. So we left, and I just want to bring this up. You, without question, you are a conservative. We know this to be true. But I do consider you a rational one. And if I can recall correctly, coming out of the last segment, did I hear you actually say that we are most likely the only way to fix the Medicare issue is to go to a one-payer system?
Well, what I think I was trying to say was that this is where it's headed, mm-hmm. that I think that the problems and the deficits are so large that this is going to result in some type of federal government takeover of the entire system.
And that's not being, to be clear, that's not being driven by the Democrats. That's being driven by the chaos in the health industry.
It's being driven by the market.
Right, right.
Because the market doesn't work anymore.
It doesn't.
And so there's dramatic understaffing at hospitals. We can't find enough doctors. I mean, what are the key economic principles at play? You need to have more supply against the ratio of demand to drive pricing down. And what we have is very high demand with not adequate supply. And so, I mean, I tried to get a dental appointment down here. It took me 4.5 months just to see a dentist.
But don't you think, back to the concept of this is where the insurance company and the providers, to me, are in cahoots. If you're in a, and this could be the case for group coverage as well. If you are in a plan that dictates what provider you go to, right? They all right. are doing that. So the insurance companies are hooking up and contracting with specific healthcare provider networks, and that's where they push their clientele because that's where they have the contracts built up to save money, right? So that the shortage part of the shortage, we could talk about demographics. That's one issue. But the reality is you've got the Humana networks are fighting against the, you know, Blue Cross networks, which are fighting against the United Healthcare mm-hmm. networks. And so they keep on building more and more and more facilities. And yet those facilities are all understaffed. But if we didn't have this crazy competition for the dollars, wouldn't it just make more sense? I would rather have a place that has 12 doctors on staff and there's someone there to have a walk-in on a daily basis, as opposed to I call up and it's going to take 6 months to get one at the place that I have to go to that's nearby.
And I think there's a lot more at play beyond that, even having sat through seminars on health insurance and Medicare when I was selling. And I can't remember the carrier at this time, but being talking about private health insurance or group health insurance for employees, the fact that they're going to be paying 165% of base. So let's say the base dollar is $100 for a procedure. They're going to pay $165 for that because the reimbursement rates coming out of Medicare and Medicaid were also so low that they have to offset that. So even that disparity within how the pricing is done, because of government involvement, you know, and I agree with Congressman. I believe at some point it's going to get to a single payer system just because it's so messed up.
It is messed up.
It's not my preference, but I think that's where we're going.
You know, and again, this kind of comes back to the structure that we're in now in terms of, you know, why are in some way taxpayers rooting for the insurance companies and the healthcare providers? Because they're corporations. I mean, insurance companies are corporations. They're all in our 401ks. Mm-hmm. It's shareholder driven. An insurance company's job, if it's publicly held, is to be profitable. So we're in this conundrum. And I know there's a lot of healthcare facilities that are supposed to be nonprofit. There's an awful lot of profit made in hospitals. Let's get that straight. It's just a matter of putting it back into other buildings. Mm-hmm. So let's slaughter. Well, by the way, Congressman, I'm going to read this to you. A text came in that says Reed has a kind, calming, and reasonable voice.
Oh, that's kind.
That is kind.
Very
see,
nice.
And you know they're kind. A Democrat. See, that was nice. See, we're purple.
Well, we don't know that for sure.
Oh, we know that.
I mean, it's written in cursive, so I guess it could be a Democrat.
Oh, come on. All right, so we're going to slide out of the Medicare conversation, and now we're going to slide into the under 65 health market. The Affordable Health Care Act went in. There are some good things that came out of it, and there are definitely some challenges. So, Congressman, if you would share with me where you started on this conversation and where you are today.
Yeah, I'm on the Affordable Care Act. I'm pretty much at the same place I was when it was originally passed. I didn't think it would drive pricing down, and I predicted that prices were going to go up and go up dramatically, and that's exactly what happened. Because I think where the big mistake was in the Affordable Care Act was that they took the people that were at your highest risk people, and rather than creating a separate high risk pool just for them.
Which Wisconsin had.
Which we had and worked really well, yeah.
I won't say perfect because nothing else can work perfect, but it worked much better than the system where everybody's grouped in it together. And you can't really, if you're doing what you need to do to, let's say, maintain your weight and try to stay physically fit and eat right and stay healthy, you get penalized in many cases because the same insurance company that's insuring you is now insuring the guy that doesn't care at all. And there's no incentives for actually getting healthy under Obamacare. And the incentives are upside down. And the minute you put incentives upside down, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
And I'll speak to HRSP a little bit when we had it in the state with our high risk plan. I had clients that I placed in HRSP. And when Obamacare came into place or the Affordable Care Act came into place, they saw increases in cost and increases in premium leaving HRSP to go to the Affordable Care Act, which I thought was completely backwards to what we were told was supposed to happen. And they were already high risk clients.
They were supposed to get support back, right? They were supposed to get the money back.
Right. All right.
So it's fair to say that there's definitely people that have been hurt by Obamacare. I think that's a fair statement that has to be said out loud. Let's talk about who was helped by it.
Talk about what? I'm sorry.
Let's talk about who was helped by the Affordable Health Care.
Well, I think people who worked for smaller companies that didn't have health insurance offered at their place of employment, who were maybe in a lower to mid income range, they were able to go on the exchanges and shop around, find a plan that they could buy directly, and then get premium support from the government. So those folks should have been a winner in it. However, if they were already in the state high risk pool for one reason or other, then they got hurt by it.
Yeah, and I actually saw clients that were in the same situation that you were just describing, that even with the subsidized premiums that they received and sometimes subsidized coverage, they did take a step backwards because they were more moderate income, not super low income, where they were seeing more out-of-pocket expense. Premiums might have stayed roughly the same or a little bit higher, but their out-of-pocket cost went up.
Yeah,
I think that there's a pickle, right? So the reality is, prior to the healthcare, there were some that could not get coverage, and the HRSP, as an example in Wisconsin, was unattainable for them from a cost perspective, because didn't it run like roughly three times what a major?
No,
that was my experience, but it has been a long time. So
I don't remember it being that dramatic, but I think that the issue we had, we'll take Nevada. And we had Harry Reid helping to promote the whole Affordable Care Act. But in Nevada, they did not have a HRSP option. So there was no high risk pool out there.
We agree it's necessary to provide coverage for those that are uninsurable?
Yeah, of course.
Yes,
I agree.
So I think that has to be stated, right? I mean, I do think even Ron Johnson, he did it behind closed doors, but I was in a meeting one time, and I even heard him say, we can't take that back. We really can't. There are things that came out of this
that I think
are important. Everyone deserves the right to be covered. Now, back to your point on who's being penalized and who's being rewarded. You know, I think that you can talk about affordable health care, but to me, a lot of this goes back with the first conversation. If the machine of health care is broken, are we a health care proponents, or are we a maintenance? You know what I mean? I feel like there aren't any rewards in our healthcare system for those who are out there doing their thing. But the healthcare industry doesn't make money by everybody being healthy either. Mm-hmm. So if there's a problem in the insurance world and the healthcare world when you're dealing with Medicare and Medicare advantages, then how do we not say that's part of the problem as we deal with the Affordable Health Care Act?
To me, Chris, I don't think you can separate Medicare, Medicaid, and private care health, because all of these dollars are being chased by somebody,
right?
And those dollars are chasing some type of fix. And when you look at healthcare, you've got some systems that are totally single payer, like the VA system, like the prison system, like for the most part, the Bureau of Indian Affairs. Then you've got the Medicare system and Medicaid system, which are also single-payer systems. And so right now you've got about 50 to 55% of the population in a single-payer system. And then the 45% of private pay are picking up the gap. And that's why these premiums are jumping so high.
So the theory
and then,
yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, and so it creates a real dilemma when you're trying to blend two different systems. And when I talked about having a high-risk pool, if you actually did have a true national high-risk pool, there would be enough people in it with which to establish a rate of taxation to cover it.
Right. I think that it's fair to say that we know our system. You can tell the healthcare system actually is getting people's attention, because you should see all the texts that are coming in. I mean, our screen is lit up. One of them says that the regarding the single payer system, the rest of the world makes it work. We're going to have to figure it out as well. Mm-hmm. One said they can't agree more with the conversation. Their premium is the same as the wife who needs three times as much health care. That's a valid.
It is.
It's absolutely valid. Healthcare shouldn't be based on income. It should be based on healthcare needs and health status.
I agree with that too.
I don't want to misagree. I do believe that the middle class is, in my opinion, really getting beat up on the healthcare system right now. The costs are crazy. The premiums are crazy. The out of pocket is crazy. And also not just the Obamacare, the groups are just as bad because again, it's all insurance company driven. Right. So I think there are
issues.
They're
trapped in a specific network.
Right.
Right.
But then you talk about, now we're going to talk about the lower end of things. You look at the lower class, the people that we got 2 minutes left in this segment, but the lower class where you're trying to on a $30,000 income. If you've got, two people trying to live on $30,000, which, by the way, is it's $15 an hour, right, after it all works out, that guy making $15 an hour comes home with a net paycheck after just take off 10% for baseline taxes. They're coming home with less than $2,400 in spendable money at $15 an hour. And then you have to pay for your health care, which is now easily three times more than it should be, and your out-of-pocket is out of whack. Never mind child care. But I'm trying to figure out how somebody who's only bringing home a net of $2,400 a month is supposed to pay for health care and child care.
And the catch on that is if they're in a company with that income that supplies health care, they can't go to the Affordable Care Act, where they can probably grab a plan with a subsidized, which doesn't make any sense to me.
I'm not, we're going into a break here, but in my situation, I am not on the Obamacare right now, and my premiums are pretty reasonable. It's only, maybe $250 a month, but my total out-of-pocket is $24,000 in a year between premium, deductible, and out-of-pocket max, which I hit on a regular basis. That's not right.
No, it's not.
Right? So again, it's broken. We are heading into, I believe, our final break, but we are having a great time. Please stay with us. We have Congressman Reed Ribble and Dean Rash with me talking healthcare. Come on back after Bobby McGee.
Soft while Bobby sang the blues. Yeah. Windshield wipers slapping, time eyes holding Bobby's hand in mine. We sang every song that Javi knew. Just another word for nothing left to lose. Nothing, I mean nothing, hun, if it ain't free.
Welcome back to a gloomy Thursday where the rain is coming down. It's cold. It's not snowing. But hey, we're talking healthcare. So if that doesn't brighten your day, I don't know what will.
Maybe that's why it's cold and rainy.
Listen, it's just chaos. And again, I truly appreciate my guest with me tonight, former Congressman Reed Ribble on the phone with us and in here in studio, Dean Rash. You know, we can all agree that healthcare is a disaster. We're stuck here. We're stuck, and I think that everyone feels that they should be in a better position. Those that have full-on Medicare right now wish it covered. One of the things I will say about Medicare, and I know I'm backing up a little bit here, but Congressman, do you remember when you were in my office and we talked about Social Security changing and it snuck up on all of us, the file and suspend and restricted? Remember that?
Yeah.
And I literally smacked you in the arm like, what the heck? How did that happen? And you said it's not me because it affected you too. But I feel they're doing the same thing with Medicare. So because they're not bold enough to have a conversation out loud because the money comes in as politics do, they're now doing sneaky changes. So all of a sudden you go to the ER, they check you into the hospital, but you're technically not in the hospital.
Right.
You're under observation, and you could be there for 2 days, but technically never be in the hospital, which then leaves the client in a lurch where Part D of Medicare is not going to pay the prescriptions, but neither is Part B of Medicare,
right,
because you're not either. that's not right. I don't like the sneaky changes of Medicare, because surprises hurt every family financially. So the only way to deal with our healthcare chaos, and every group of people, whether it's low income people are struggling to pay the premiums, find coverage. Middle America, I absolutely agree, is not getting the attention that they should be getting because of the costs, the premiums, the out-of-pockets. And you could argue my high-end clients are paying the excise, you know, we'll call it an excise tax, and they are absolutely paying quite a bit more mm-hmm. for years and years to come. So nobody's happy. Nobody's happy on Medicare.
Nobody's happy. But I will tell you who, you know, I wouldn't say nobody's happy.
You're right. The insurance companies are happy. Right.
There are people that are happy, and that's when some doctor and some nurse reaches inside and pulls out a miracle, and that patient survives cancer,
yeah,
or a brain tumor,
yeah,
or something critical from a car accident. Emergency care saves their lives.
Yeah,
and I think it's easy to kind of dump on the medical system, but forgetting almost the heroic efforts by many in the medical care system that Amen. Are taking care of us every single day.
Amen.
And I would, and Congressman, I would say to that too, I don't know that they're the ones that are necessarily the problem with our system. They're the ones that are doing their best to work within that. All three of my kids are in the medical world, radiology tech, nurse, and soon to be doctor. So I get it. But they're not the ones that are having they're not the ones creating the issues. They're the ones that are just trying to do their jobs and make people healthy and help them stay alive.
Three of my good friends are physicians, and they went into the profession to be the person to help, to cause good, to solve problems. That's why they're there. And their frustration is high also, because the frustrations of us, of the public, are higher and higher, and you can't help but see it come out. You know, why did it take so long to get in? Why does this one? They're doing their very best. Mm-hmm. They really are. But unfortunately, what they are doing now in their jobs is not what they came into this role to do. Mm-hmm. The doctors are spending more time on paperwork and with administration than they are with clients. Or there's a count. How many people have you seen? It's a race.
Right.
I feel bad because the
And how many people can they refer you to? I mean, you go into a typical primary care visit for just a normal annual health exam. The doctor is spending the bulk of the time entering data in their computer and then referring you to whatever other specialists inside their network that they can refer you to.
Yeah. Somebody made a comment on don't discount malpractice insurance. There is a reality that this is litigious. This is a very litigious society. I actually have one of my very best friends is an expert witness in the country. She's all over the place because she's a healthcare expert, and she goes in and she is flying around. I believe she had 45 cases. That's one expert witness had 45. So everybody wants something, and I'm not saying it isn't appropriate. I'm not saying that, but the reality is to protect any business now, any professional, the chances of something going wrong and being sued for it are sky high. Which makes it even harder to be in business.
We need tort reform for sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that would help. Transparency in prices.
Yeah.
Letting people shop for care.
All of it.
There are incremental steps that could be made. But Congress at this point is so dysfunctional, and going into an election year, they're not going to do anything of consequence.
Absolutely. That's sad.
And that's the most frustrating part of
this whole
process.
So we're going down that rabbit hole again.
Yeah.
The last thing I want to bring up, because we're running out of time, I was exposed to the concept of Medicare expansion when I ran for Senate last year. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a big conversation, and we don't have a lot to talk about, but I think that the concept of creating tiers is valid. I think that there are issues in those. Again, we talk about the $15 an hour person really only bringing home $2,000 a month. I do think that we have to help people escalate in their careers. And when we have a hard cutoff of you get benefits or you don't, mm-hmm. when it comes to health insurance, that becomes a deterrent from people advancing financially in their career.
And you're referring to Medicaid expansion.
Yep. I apologize if I said the wrong word.
No, it's okay.
Yeah. quickly, with like 30 seconds, Congressman, how do you feel about tearing it up so we can help people up and out?
Well, anything that will move people, like as you describe it, up and out, is generally something that I would support. And quite frankly, is a relatively conservative view on things.
Yeah. I mean, there are plenty of people that want to take the next step in their careers, but they would lose the health benefits if they did, so therefore they stay put.
It's that benefit clip.
We have to help them, and in Wisconsin, that is absolutely an issue that we can take to task. I do believe that the Medicaid expansion could be used for that reason.
It probably could, and we do this in other things. We do it with taxation, mm-hmm. you know, and so there are ways of actually bridging that transition from that $15 an hour to someone getting 25.
Absolutely. We got to help people mm-hmm. find success. And that's mm-hmm. one thing we can do that's very easy. And the dollars are there waiting for us. Listen, it has been it's a fast night on a tough topic, but I truly appreciate, Congressman, you taking the time out of your schedule. I hope that the decorations are not all put away and you have just enough time to help.
Funny. I'm exactly hoping for the opposite.
So is Dean and so am I.
All
right, everybody. Thank you, gentlemen. Have a happy new year. We will
see
you next week. Thanks for tuning into The Rational Revolution. This is Chris Elfheim. See you next week.
One thing I can tell you.